ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome into another edition of Infection Podcast. My name is Nick Craig. You can follow me on X at Nicholas M. Craig or check out our website. It's infectionpodcast.com. Cannot do this thing alone. Brian with an I, Aldridge. I interviewed a guy this morning, a Brian with a Y, actually, on my radio program. So he made that clear when he was spelling it. He's like, oh, you can follow me on Twitter, Brian with a Y. I was like, wow, look at this guy.
As long as he doesn't. I keep working to get Brian Aldridge on Twitter, but I just don't think it's going to happen. That cheer dad's got me. He loves posting pictures of his cheer kids. So anyway,
don't get all Google Hangouts on me.
Yeah. If you want to find me on X, you can get me at Voice Computer still till that guy either dies or retires. Of course, and then for me on everywhere else, Brian Aldridge. If you want to check out my blog, biteoftech.com, and that's where I am.
All right. Well. We've got a bunch of interesting news this week. It might make sense to start off with the old Apple and Epic. We've got some continuing escalation might be the right word to use here. Apparently the Fortnite app is now being blocked in the UK by Apple. So this is, This is the battle of the two juggernauts, Tim Sweeney and Epic, Tim Apple and the Apple Corporation, as it's known. So what's going on here?
Well, of course, Apple lost their lawsuit. We talked about that a number of weeks ago, and they have not been very friendly when it comes to how they're reacting to what they're supposed to be doing with the lawsuit. What they have chosen to do instead is to actually cancel the developer's license for Epic Games, because what they were supposed to be allowing Epic to put their game store up on the phone and doing all these things. And instead, just recently, they terminated their Epic developer's account. And now Epic can't post things. They can't make an app for the phone store. And so this is definitely not good faith. I mean, as far as how they're enforcing this, there's been a lot of comments from developers and different people that they like to say, what, familiar with the matter? Is what they say.
Sources familiar with the matter.
Yeah, familiar with that means, of course, they're professionals. Here's one, Gurgly Oroz is his name. I think that's his actual name. Dare criticize Apple, and they can and sometimes will remove you from their platform as a developer. They just did this with Epic. I cannot remember even Microsoft being this much of a bully back in the 90s. Apple became the very thing they fought against in 1984. And what he references in here is a post that Epic made on their blog, and we'll have a link to that if you want to check it out in the show notes. And here's what they said. They said, we recently announced that Apple approved our Epic Games Sweden AB developer account. We intended to use that account to bring the Epic Games Store and Fortnite to iOS in Europe, thanks to the Digital Markets Act, DMA. To our surprise, Apple has terminated that account, and we cannot develop the Epic Games Store for iOS. This is a serious violation of the DMA and shows Apple has no intention of allowing true competition on iOS devices. DMA requires Apple to allow third-party app stores like the Epic Games Store, and they give the article reference, and says, the DMA says, the gatekeeper shall allow and technically enable the installation of effective use of third-party software applications or software application stores using or interoperating with its operating system, allowing those software applications or software application stores to be accessed by means other than the relevant core platform services of that gatekeeper. According to Epic, says Apple is taking out one of the largest potential competitors to the Apple App Store. They are undermining our ability to be a viable competitor, and they are showing our developers what happens when you try to compete with Apple or are critical of their unfair practices. So this, they have, a list of things that they've done, trying to work with Apple over the last decade, sure. I think it is. And this Apple used to claim to not be these things. Now they were a very closed system.
They always have
before, but that was, that was because they wanted to have total creative control. That was Steve Jobs pushing a lot of that. Now, I don't think it's for the same reasons. I don't think it's because they want creative control. I just think they don't want competition for the money. And this all started, I mean, if you remember, there was that video that Epic played that had, you remember, that it was like a 1984 reference for the book, there was a screen, and do you remember that video they showed? It kind
You're
of
talking
started
about the,
all
yeah the 1984 where the guy throws the hammer through the PC.
Throws the hammer, yeah. You know, kind of, and this kind of proves that's exactly how they are. If we can't win, then we're just going to not fight fair, and this is exactly what they're doing. You know, they got approved on the account, but is it anywhere in their stipulations that if you don't always talk nice about them, that they can just cancel your account? I didn't realize that was an issue.
I'm sure that that's buried somewhere in the legalese of it all. if we're being honest, I mean, I'm sure there's something in there that protects them. You know, this is going to be very interesting for Apple to deal with. Now, as you noted, this is a UK specific thing. This is, you know, that's what the ruling
is. Yeah, it's not
was,
the US developer's license.
So. Correct. It's the UK developer's license. if Apple is found in a breaching of the you know, legally binding agreement that has been brought on by the court, then I assume that they'll be held to account for it. And not that I'm a big fan of the UK government by any stretch of the imagination, Brian. However, they take this this stuff very seriously. They've got that whole all these websites now in the US have these I don't remember the acronym for it, but they've got this a GDPR, this specific compliant thing tag on the bottom of their website. This is a GDPR compliant website, or this is not a GDPR compliant website. And here's the reason why. They're probably a little bit overboard when it comes to that stuff. But in the case of them being a little overboard and crazy, it is likely to help out Epic in this case. If they're found in violation, you know, you wonder kind of what the end game here is for Apple. They obviously make a lot of money on their App Store. There's very little work, but I mean, they're getting a lot of stuff in terms of a profit for a relatively small amount of work, hosting the database and doing updates and all that stuff. It is a service. The question is, do those level of services rise to the extraordinary fees that they charge? And I think most folks would argue 30% is high. This is the same thing that Apple's Epic rather has been fighting with on the computer side. I mean, part of the big reason they brought forward the Epic Games Store was because Tim Sweeney was very unhappy with Steam's what he called, you know, egregious and overbearing percentages that they would take from every transaction, and he tried to change that into, you know, he's had a little bit of success. Steam is still the gold standard. I have not purchased many games on Epic. I don't typically open the Epic launcher. I couldn't tell you the last time I opened the Epic launcher.
I open it quite often, but I you know, I do stuff in there, and I always get their free things.
Yeah, I don't even bother getting the free games because it's just like I don't bother with it. But I'll give Tim Sweeney credit for this. He's consistent, and this is a hill that he is obviously willing to plant the flag and die on. And I wish him all the luck. I'm an Apple fan. I've got my iPhone here. I will always have an iPhone. I will have no reason to switch from an iPhone. Nobody will make a compelling argument against that to me in any current times. Who knows what the future might hold, but I'm all for Apple being held account. And I do love the comment on the tweet that you read earlier. You know, not even Microsoft was being like this back in the 90s when they were facing antitrust and had to stop. You know, there was the big question over packaging Internet Explorer. And that was part of a huge antitrust lawsuit in the 90s that hurt Microsoft severely. Funny enough, actually, Microsoft paid to put Internet Explorer on early versions of Mac because they were trying to gain their market share, and they literally paid for that. So there was many versions of IE that were built and worked on the Mac, and that was an attempt to destroy Netscape Navigator, which was a paid web browser. If you can even imagine that. So
that's what was around when I first started. So.
Yeah, and that was kind of the gold standard for a lot of folks was Netscape Navigator until Microsoft put a lot of development work into IE. So I'm all for Apple getting knocked down a couple of pegs, and I guess we'll
see what happens. That'll be interesting. This may be really bad if it gets some people motivated here in the United States, because there is a bill that I don't think it's been passed. I don't know if it's been passed, but it's been put forward. I'll get a link to the PDF here so you can see this.
Okay.
But it's the Open Markets Act. And this is one that pretty much directly addresses all these things that we're talking about. They're talking about having, who's covered, an app store that serves more than 50 million people. They talk about in-app payment systems. They talk about, pretty much the things that Apple is fighting over there as thing that would require to kind of open that up. And, I don't like having more and more government oversight, but we're locked. I'm kind of more on the fence on this one because you're locked into two devices. If you say, well, if you don't like Apple and you don't like Android, go get a different phone. Okay, what phone am I supposed to get? Like, what phone is out there that I can get that isn't one of those two devices, which falls right into what it used to be with the old Ma Bell and, as the things you said, even with the browsers and all these things.
Bell South there and were, AT&T, yeah.
There used to be, with phones, landline phones, what other device would you get? You say, well, you don't like your local telephone company, get a different one. Okay, how am I supposed to do that? There's one phone company that comes to my house. Here, the way that the phone systems have worked out, there's two options for phones. There's not really any other options. And the fact that they lock down their app stores, they're locking you to two ecosystems. So it does end up kind of being a situation where what can you do about it? Apple is showing, what they're willing to do about it. And that may motivate them to push this bill through and say, hey, guess what, Apple, you're not going to do that here. We don't need to go through court. We're just going to make a law and you're going to follow it.
I find it interesting who the bill sponsors are. It's
Blackburn.
Richard Blumenthal, Marsha Blackburn, and Amy Klobuchar, which is kind of an interesting crew of individuals bringing this forward. Maybe Joe Biden will talk about this at his State of the Union tomorrow. I think his big thing now is credit card junk fees. $6 is the maximum late fee they can charge or whatever, which is somehow going to help me in the ravaged economy. So maybe we'll forward this along to the White House. They can mention this tomorrow. This will be good.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there will be a lot of great points in the State of the Union.
Yeah, many great points.
Keeping me on the edge of my seat.
Definitely. So, it's a problem. But I'll say this, Brian. Not every problem has a government solution.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is one of them. I'm not a fan of regulation. Yeah. I'm not a fan of government peeking their, sticking their nose into business that they really don't have any place in being. And this is, just like when you talk about, you have, younger children, the federal government's got to do something to protect these kids online. I don't know that there's a policy solution for that. I think that's something that, unless you're willing to just go full on communist dictator, like what you've got in China, where kids can play video games for a maximum of what?
4 hours
a week or something like that. It's like, it's like 4 hours a week and 30 minutes on weekdays or whatever. Unless you're willing to extend it that far, there's not going to be a policy solution that is going to work. And if there is a policy solution, You know damn well these major companies like Apple, who have the legal resources and the attorneys, will find ways around it. As the, as you would expect, because that's what business does. The same way that you look at corporate taxes and see how these companies pay nothing.
Yep. I think that the best solution would be a third option for phones. Android is supposed to be open source, but obviously it's not. You know, if someone took the branch from them and started making something actual open source, that would be one thing. But they just need to make a third option for a phone that has an open marketplace, kind of like what Linux does.
But there is. There have been these attempts. And here's the problem.
It just hasn't gone well.
It's not that it hasn't gone well. It's that nobody's asking for it. Now, it sounds good.
People don't like the consequences of how it is now, but no one's willing to jump into something and embrace it.
No, of course not, because we're creatures of habit. We like our creature comforts, and you have those creature comforts on iOS. You have those comforts on Android. So there's been plenty of attempts to make these open source phones. I mean, OnePlus is kind of, they're more on the hardware side than it is the software side.
But they take a lot of junk out, right?
They do, and they've done a good job at that, and they've built a nice little niche market there. They're not anywhere near the top mobile phone manufacturer. If you asked 100 people if they've ever heard of if what OnePlus was, they'd have no freaking clue. So there have been these attempts for these open source phones and things of that nature. First of all, the user experience isn't great. And secondly, nobody's willing to put in the effort. I mean, it's the same reason you look at why Linux desktops like Ubuntu don't have so much more widespread appeal across the general consumer base. Not that Linux, not that Ubuntu or some of these other OSs can't do everything that Windows does, but you've got the comfort in using Windows. Why would
these companies don't make the applications. They don't want to make the applications for something else.
But a lot of that's solved already with Wine and everything else.
Well, so to a point, but you know, if these companies would guarantee that they made an application, for instance, Adobe would make it for Linux, which there are licensed, because it's truly open source, we run into issues there, right? They don't want to put out an open source version of their application, and it's kind of a pain. You need to have something that's open to where there's not a company sitting over you saying you can and can't do this, but you got to get something that these companies are going to be willing to make applications for and serve it on your product. And that hasn't happened. That's what really kills Linux from being a desktop is the companies that make business applications don't make them for Linux as much. They're starting to here and there, but I can't run my business, you know, things I do for my work. I can't run that on a Linux box all the time. Yeah. Visual Studio doesn't work. You know, there's these other companies, and why would Microsoft be motivated to make an application? You know, they've been doing better about it, but they're not going to be generally motivated to make something for a competitor, and they make a lot of the most important software for business.
Correct. Yeah, and
Outlook, Word, everything.
Yeah, now fortunately, the OWA, you know, with all of the Office products in the cloud, some of that has gone away. Yeah. So the alternatives do exist. But people don't want to, it's one of those things, Brian, that sounds great, but in practicality and in reality, it just never works it doesn't live up to
too many things
potential.
Are already cemented at this point that makes it difficult. Yeah. If it were at the very beginning in a perfect world, we'd say, hey, let's go this direction so that in the end we end up here. Well, that's not how. Not how everything happened. And so now we're stuck in a position where you have to kind of go back a number of steps if you want to do it right. And people don't want to do that.
Yeah. I'm looking at, you know, there's a variety of companies that make open source phones. I mean, you've probably never,
but what apps are you going to put on them?
Yeah. I mean, this is the Librem 5. I mean, look at how garbage this thing looks. This looks like freaking what was HP's Oh, God. What was their OS
called? Was it WebOS?
WebOS. This looks like WebOS from 2010.
Well, this was called PureOS. Yeah, so.
I mean, look at it. It looks just like what. Look, I mean, it's got the same crappy user interface.
Linux. It looks like it runs Linux.
It's definitely Linux. But look, I mean, come on. This looks like garbage.
This but you know, I mean, this would be the steps back, though. They would have to start here and then get people seeing that it actually works and then get companies to make their applications for it. But Linux would have to get these first. I mean, they won't make it, if they won't make them for Linux, then they're not going to make it for this phone.
Yeah, look at this, Brian. GNOME directions.
Their dictionary. There you go.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. Dictation. Yeah. So they're. I'm curious if they've got a. Oh, look at this. You can run it on a desktop as well. It's a fully, wow. Okay. Never heard of this. I'm curious what apps are available.
Probably anything that runs on Linux, but you'd have to find apps that will size properly to that small of a display.
Apps, here we go. Default apps. So it's got the whole LibreOffice suite.
So
Thunderbird.
Word, Excel,
which is what I would expect.
Email, yeah.
Yeah. And then GNOME.
Calendaring,
calendar,
contacts.
Photo app. Yeah,
it's pretty much just a Linux machine.
Yeah. Considered. Audacity, okay. GIMP.
There's your photo editor.
GIMP. Ah, Transmission. Look at that.
You can download videos and...
No. You can download mirrors and torrents.
Oh, yeah.
And ISOs. Nextcloud. And ISOs. And feed reader. So, I mean, all of this to say it exists. This phone looks like a heaping pile of garbage, and I guarantee you, Brian, if you had this thing for a week, you'd be ready to kill yourself. Because of how awful it would be.
But the thing is, I don't run Linux for my main desktop. So, you know, that kind of shows you.
It's 1,000. Dude, look at how thick it is. This thing is a monster.
It's a portable computer.
Phone.
I mean, look at, like, I mean, have to make it run Linux.
This is a USB-C jack. It's like five. This thing looks awful. Look at the size of this thing. Jesus. And look at it. Look at this crappy little camera on it. So to answer your question, Brian, this is why. I don't even think it has a front-facing camera. Oh, yeah, I guess maybe it does. Hold on. I got to pull up a YouTube video of this thing. This thing looks like a freaking hog of a phone. Oh, look at this. There's a Linus Tech Tips video on it from 5 years ago. This is a different video.
It's still $1,000. That thing's like a little app. It's like a little tablet.
Look at it. It looks like a like an Anker power bank.
Yeah, they stuck a tablet into a phone. They like squished everything together.
Yeah, let me see here. I want to see more. I mean, that thing is huge, man. This looks like a sat phone.
I wonder how warm it gets. It probably gets.
It doesn't
warm.
Have that. No, it doesn't have that good of a processor. It's got a.
Is it pretty low in mobile?
I don't know what this is. I don't know even who makes
Which
this.
Which is funny. They have handbrake. It's like you're going to go and rip videos on.
Well, you got to remember.
Videos on
this
a cell phone.
But remember, this is for PureOS, which will run on.
Oh, yeah. So it
this
can
is
do
supposed
both.
To be run anywhere. So all of this to say, sorry to whoever that company is, PureOS and that company. It looks cool. Point is, it does exist, Brian.
I mean,
being
in the perfect
great.
World.
Not in a perfect world. It's a great idea. Nobody wants it. They say they want it, but they don't. This is the same thing that we deal with in the video game realm. I deal with this more probably than you do because of the era in which I was playing some of these early games. But you know, I look back and say, this is a common thing for people my age, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. I was in high school or middle school whenever that came out. I don't know.
Nostalgia.
I go back to that, man, it was so much fun. What a great game. The game was a heaping pile of garbage. It was laden with bugs. It was glitchy as all hell, but it's that nostalgia factor that you go back to. Right? So it's the same thing when we talk about like something like you're describing, you know, a third choice for phones or whatever. It sounds great. But in practicality, until you have to use it. And then you realize, man, this kind of sucks. I can't can't listen to anything on Spotify.
Android really sucked when it first came out. And the thing is, because there wasn't really, you know, phones were fairly rudimentary at that point in time. They had time to build it up. And people, I think, are so reliant on their phones and expect a certain thing now. It'll be tough for a competitor to come in the market. People keep saying, you know, Elon Musk, why don't you make a phone? He may. If anybody would
but it's going to run Android.
Yeah, it would run. It would be something Android that they take the open source part and then keep Google out of it or something, you know, or, you know, it would be a more open phone, but he'd probably want to do it because of his satellite service now that it can offer cell phone service.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Something like that.
Let's talk about that for a minute. I know it's not in the show notes, but this is kind of an interesting thing this week. He posted an image on X that he was getting some, you said 17 megabits.
17 megabits, yeah, 17 megabit throughput consistently, because they had a number of transmissions that they did, and they were all, you know, in the 16, 17, 18 range. I think it averaged out to about 17 megabits, and that was direct to their cell phone. And they were hoping initially just to have the ability to send rudimentary texts and things like that, which they may start out with and then kind of ramp it up as they get better. But I know they're wanting to lower the satellites even more closer to the Earth because that would make some of these things even better.
Yeah. This week, the company sent its first text message from space as it prepares to launch its mobile phone service to customers within the year. Worldwide.
T-Mobile's going to offer this as a service. Yeah. That's who they announced it with first, is so that you can go and, you know, if I'm up in the mountains in the middle of nowhere where I don't have cell phone service usually, like my wife's parents' cabin, up there I have to have a device. They have internet, you know, from a landline, and I have the thing that broadcasts cell phone up there because you go all a week or a
cell booster
and have... No, this one actually creates it from an internet signal.
Oh, you're right. Okay, yeah. So you plug in Ethernet, and then it creates essentially a small
hotspot
for a 5G radio. Yeah.
Yes, and so I use that so I can receive. Now they've gotten better about having using wireless network to be able to do some of those things, to make calls and things like that. But when we first started doing it, you went up there, and nothing would work with just Wi-Fi. Like, you wouldn't get calls. You wouldn't be able to send text messages. And so I got one of those, and that thing worked really well. But now, if he can get this going, it'll be nice, as you can go for a walk up in the mountains, you know, go to the top of a peak, and you'll still have cell phone service. And that'll be great for people, you know, getting lost, you know, because now, I don't know how bad it is where you are, but up here, people can wander out in the wilderness, get lost, and sometimes they don't come back because of how remote some of these places are. And you won't get cell phone service for miles and miles and miles and miles.
Ham radio.
And that'll be a thing that'll kind of be a thing of the past. You know, once they get this fully implemented, someone gets stranded, as long as you have power on your cell phone, you'll be able to make a call or a text and get some help.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we were talking about Epic. Let's talk a little bit about something we mentioned last week. It was something that actually popped up towards the end of the show, and we mentioned it. There wasn't a lot of details, but there was supposed to be a ransomware attack against Epic, where supposedly these things were stolen. It ended up being a hoax. They said, "We don't think of ourselves as hackers, but rather as criminal geniuses, if you can call us that." Well, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily what they are, because they didn't really get anything. A group calling itself Mogilevich had claimed to be accessing Epic Games' data and threatening to release its data unless it was paid. But Epic itself denied it had been hacked. And now Mogilevich has admitted the scam. Cyber Daily quoted a spokesperson from the hacker group who said, "The group tried to trick hackers into buying hacking tools. In reality, we are not a ransomware as a service, but professional fraudsters," the spokesperson said. "None of the databases listed in our blog were as true as you might have discovered recently. We took advantage of big names to gain visibility as quickly as possible, but not to fame and receive approval, but to you, build meticulously our new trafficking of victims to scam." Kind of odd that they're that open about it. I mean,
some grade A individuals here
change their names. Yeah. So they said, now the real question is, why confess all this when we could just run away? This is done to illustrate the process of our scam. we don't think of ourselves as hackers, but rather as criminal geniuses. That's what I quoted before, if you can call us that. Cyber Daily points out, even this confession may be a lie, but what is clear is they're not behind a hack of Epic Games or any other organization. Indeed, Epic Games itself had issued a statement insisting there was zero evidence that this was legitimate. So
what? Because it was supposed to be released on Monday, I believe.
Yeah, they had asked for $15,000,
which is a small sum of ransom
to hand over this data. Yep.
Yeah. So they didn't.
Reality.
They didn't turn it over. Or they didn't pay for it, and nothing happened because it was all made up.
Yep. Yep. That was
good to know.
That was pretty much the end of it.
Interesting. Well, thanks for the update on that. That was it's kind of interesting when we were talking about that last week. Again, a pretty, you know, when fortunately a company like Epic is, I'm sure they've got enough auditing and ability in house to look at that and actually say, no, there's no indication that anything was uploaded or downloaded or breached or accessed. So there's just this BS. But if you went after a much smaller entity, you probably could get away with it because those auditing tools aren't going to be there. I mean, if somebody claimed that they
Epic
hacked
knows
into
if
my
someone came into their network.
If somebody claimed they got into my network and stole sensitive data, I don't think I'd have any way to prove that that didn't happen.
Yeah. See, like I've got a honeypot here just as okay, if someone does get into my network, they'll probably do a network scan to see what devices are here. And they might move on around to try to find something. And so that's kind of my hope. But I've got logs, but I'm not sitting there, for my home internet connection reviewing my logs.
But I guarantee if you piled through those logs, I'd guarantee you wouldn't even be able to find what the hell you were looking for. Because, I mean, it's going to be just, there's going to be stuff all over the place. There's way too much traffic. There's things pinging and ponging all over the damn place. You've probably got your Wi-Fi toaster oven that's phoning home to some Chinese data.
Our fridge is Wi-Fi enabled.
Oh, you're one of those people.
It came with the house. Our washer and dryer is Wi-Fi enabled, so it notifies me. It does tests to itself and makes sure that it's still in working order. Notifies me when loads are done. The fridge
notifies
tells
you.
Me
isn't that your wife's job?
And then with the fridge, like if someone leaves the door open, it'll ping me. It gives me recipe recommendations, does all that kind of stuff.
I'm not one to speak. I just got one of those vacuums, one of those Wi-Fi vacuums. Yeah. That thing's pretty sweet.
See, mine died. I've got to do I got to call them because it doesn't charge anymore. Like it worked fine and all of a sudden it stopped charging. Tried to get a different battery and it still didn't work. I just haven't had time to deal with it yet. But they are cool.
But my point is, if you were to look at your network traffic, you'd be like, I have no idea what any of this.
There's millions of lines of logging data.
You're not going to know. So that's the thing is, a company like Epic, probably not the best use case, but smaller entities or places that might not have the kind of infrastructure that they do, you might be able to get away with this because they're not going to be able to say, no, that's not true.
And they're probably some kids, 16-year-old age range that are
Kevin
messing around doing this. Yeah. So we'll see. All right. There's one that you'd mentioned before we went live. And do you want to talk about that one really quick here?
Yeah. So I thought this was a pretty funny headline. So this is out of futurism.com. It's a couple months old. But a tech conference was canceled after using AI to generate fake women speakers. So apparently this tech conference, this group called DevTernity, was accused of using fake female speakers on their events website with AI generated headshots and all. Now, Brian, I can only assume that this is because of DEI. And if, God forbid, they just had their regular line of speakers, which would have been 90%+ male, because that's who is most likely in the development realm. Not that there are not women developers, there are, but a vast majority of them, the very, very much major majority, is men. They got to ramp up their DEI efforts, so they created a bunch of using the men who run this thing, yeah, created a bunch of women headshots and were going to go forward with this. Pretty interesting, right?
Well, and that's part of the problem is nowadays they don't want to do things based on reality anymore. They want to do things based on, I saw a talk where at a university where they were showing these kids, for instance, for the Super Bowl ratings or for the Super Bowl commercials.
Oh, okay.
They would show the different, you know, here's the race demographics in the United States as far as the percentage of the populations. And then they said, here's the representation in Super Bowl ads. And you look at Hispanics who were, 20% or something of the population. They have like zero representation when it comes to what's happening in the Super Bowl ads. African-Americans or black people, because not everybody's from Africa that's black. They had twice as much of their demographic of what they represent for the United States. For white people, it was less. Asians was exactly even with the population. And so, you look at these things, if they would do that in something like this, then they would be accused of not being open enough for women. Because if you showed the percentage of women that attend these conferences and you showed that in your pictures as representative to the actual amount, people would say, you are not representing women enough. No, if you're representing reality, all of a sudden they get mad at you and say that you're not representing whatever this fake reality that they want to push off. And that's what DEI does. Usually it's a fake reality that they're trying to push off that they say you have to accept. Here, these people, because they didn't have real women speakers, because the population of women speakers that are, that you wouldn't be pushing up there for the wrong reasons, is small. And so you're not going to have as many examples to put on your little website and have pictures of. So they made them up. I can understand why they did it. The problem is most of these conferences, what they would do is then they would put up people that aren't qualified, that are talking nonsense, have them up there talking just so they can be represented, rather than having somebody that has a meaningful talk. That's the problem. That's what we've come accustomed to.
So here it is. Software developer, 79% male, 21% female. So it's an 80-20.
So if you show about an 80% representation of men to women in how you're doing your pictures and things like that, they'll say you're not representing women well enough. Well, that's the reality. And it's growing. That's actually up, I think,
quite a huge number. It's a pretty big number.
20 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 8% of all software developers are LGBT. But look at how the representation when it came to PAX.
Sure.
I mean, look, when it comes to developers at these more woke conferences, do they represent as if they're 8%? No, they represent as if they're 80% and we're the minority, right? And so that's what they've been pushing, because they don't like reality. They want to force you to go into their version of reality. And that's what, Jordan Peterson and all those guys kind of stood up to that in Canada. And with some of these things, that's why they became big. Because they said, I'm not going to conform to your version of reality. I'm going to stick with what I view as actual reality. I'm not going to make up something just to make you feel better. And that's what we're fighting here too. And this is an example of that. What should they have done? Not represent women in their pictures? Would that have been a better solution? They didn't have female speakers to show. Because they're a much smaller demographic. And the people that have been doing this a long time, there are some women. Some of the first programmers were women. This is something that women are capable of doing, but they choose
not to. What's the NASA movie with, Jesus. I'm totally drawing a blank on it. What's the,
Hidden Figures? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, Hidden Figures. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That whole movie. Who's the main actor in that? I'm picturing his face, but I'm completely drawing a blank. The whole premise of that movie was this group of females at NASA that did were incredibly instrumental.
They called them computers.
Yeah, essentially, because these women
they were the original computers. People who did math were called computers. And then they got replaced by electronic computers. And one of the first people that was part of that,
Kevin Costner, by the way,
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
If you look at this, you know, they were pushing more of these were black women. But the fact that they were women at that time representing, there was also some white women that were some of the grandmothers, I guess you could call them, of computers.
You know,
it wasn't just these black women. They were good, very vital in NASA doing these things. But the original computers and trying to break some of the codes, like even in World War II, there was women doing some of those things.
I asked you who the lead in that movie was, and you ignored me. And that's fine, Brian. I appreciate your co-host. However, your lovely wife just texted me and said Kevin Costner. So, I mean, I'm glad that one of you guys is paying attention to what's going on here. But my point, and again, this is all DEI. This is diversity, yep, equity, and inclusion. This attempt to force it's what's so funny about it, Brian, is it's so selective. Like it's big in tech, it's big in video games, it's big in these genres. Yet you don't hear, not in plumbing, not in construction, not in trash collection, not in line workers for power utilities. There's none of these efforts in any of these other industries. Now there are programs to get more diverse individuals into those fields, which I'm all for, but yeah, you don't see and hear the same forced, ridiculous diversity garbage in 90% of industry worldwide that you get in tech and gaming in this whole sphere. It's so fake. It's really weird. Cause you just don't see it. You don't see it elsewhere. I mean, are you seeing this push in mechanics?
No.
You walk into your local mechanic shop, there's a bunch of AI-generated women headshots all over the place. Why is that? No. Why are we not doing it in that industry?
When it comes to the representation, like if they have pictures, you know, promotional pictures where they show their supposed workers, you'll have a woman there who's like, "Hey, I'm changing this oil." Okay, you look in the out on the floor, there's not a single woman out there changing oil. I mean, once in a while, there are ones that do, but they're few and far between.
It's just all fake.
The funny thing with programming is, so some of the first programmers, one was Ada Lovelace, and this was in the mid-1800s. She was what they considered one of the first programmers. Most people don't realize that a lot of programming originally was done for making fabrics and weaving. And so the idea that they come up with is they could come up with patterns and they'd stick it into this weaving machine and it would weave the pattern that you programmed onto the card. And that was early programming. They then turned that around, used the same concept to program the early machines, the punch cards that you'd put into the machine. But women were the ones that were doing this work because they were running the machines that were making the weaving and the things for the fabrics. So the first programmers were women, and it was a majority women, and they decided to do other things as it became more of a profession. Women do it, but it's not the priority for most women, and it's not the field they want to go into. Maybe it's because not all women want to sit in front of a computer and stare at a screen all day.
Oh yeah, but exactly.
I don't know I don't know what it is, but they just don't choose to do it en masse.
Yeah, it's all forced diversity, and then you've got this tech company who doesn't want to get canceled or doesn't want to be accused of being, you know, bigoted or whatnot. So they use AI to generate some female speakers, and then it all comes crumbling down. So mission accomplished, Brian.
Canceled
everybody wins. Everybody wins. Everybody's happy. We give ourselves a great round of applause. Great stuff.
Yeah. One thing I saw, there was another one here going the other direction from Massively OP, where someone was fired from Activision Blizzard, and they claim it's because he was old and white. So he's suing them because of him saying that there's discrimination that was going the other direction because he's an old white guy. Now, this is a slippery slope because how can you really prove this? I hate that so much.
Well, you can prove it right here. Bobby Kotick said in a leadership conference that the studio having, quote, too many old white guys was a problem. So, I mean...
Well, but they all say that. I mean, you know, but whether they do something about it, how do you prove that?
Well, I don't know that you... Well, I don't know that you need to prove that. I think when you've got these comments being made, you've absolutely given yourself the... You as a company have very much opened yourself up to people filing these wrongful termination suits.
But how many times have we heard people saying we have too many old white guys working at our company?
All the time.
I mean, I've heard companies say this.
You have.
And that and should if you, be something you're not allowed to say. That's totally
inappropriate. It's not only inappropriate, it's illegal. I mean, it would be considered workplace discrimination.
But they do it still.
It's a federally... Contrary to belief, Brian, white and men are both federally protected classes.
But it doesn't end up working. Like, why?
Well, because nobody's willing... Because nobody's going to care when you sue these companies, right? It's not a big headline.
Well, it's going to take a number of people coming in and suing.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, I mean, look what happened with the universities. The universities were doing incredibly racist programs of only hiring people based on race or only allowing admissions based on race and you know, whatever check boxes they've enlisted. And they were able to come in and say, the federal court came in and said, you can't do that anymore. It's going to take them in the federal court overturning this. And there's been pushes to do this recently. I've been seeing pushes to turn around and get this stuff undone because it's just ended up being a big racist program. If I go for a job and you go for a job and anyone else goes for the same job, we should be hired based on our ability to do that job well for that company. Who would be the best fit to make the company do well? And that's not what it is anymore. And it's really coming to hurt a lot of these companies when all of these DEI hires end up causing big problems. I mean, I heard rumors there was a big outage yesterday or the day before with Facebook, Meta. And people were saying, you know, that it was because they ended up firing so many people. And unlike Elon Musk, they didn't fire all the people that were extra and weren't needed, you know, because I'm sure Meta had to hold on to all their DEI hires. And so they ended up having a bunch of issues. You know, you fire a high percentage of your staff, you better be ready to still maintain it. Remember when people were saying that X, or when it was Twitter, that it was going to come crumbling down because of how many people he fired?
Yeah, he fired 80% of the workers or something.
80% and the thing now has the highest usage ever.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they didn't need all those people, but those are the people that these companies refuse to fire, but they're going to have to eventually if they can't run anymore, if they can't maintain what they built, that's going to be the thing that finally turns this around, I think.
Well, next week we'll give you a little foreshadow of what you can expect. We've got a whole... We're going to dive back in. We got to clear out our show notes here.
We have a page worth, a
literal whole page of layoffs. So we'll be doing a lot of that on next week's show. But I don't remember what I was listening to. Oh, I was up at I got about an hour and a half of sleep last night because of election stuff. But so I was up at 4 and I was listening to Red Eye Radio, which is one of the overnight shows. And, they were specifically talking about these DEI positions and roles and the salaries
have way higher salaries.
But these whole departments and some of these companies, it's tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of salary that goes into these departments. And that's
the things that are not having any improvement on what the company is producing.
When times are good, that's great. When you've got tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to piss away, it's great. But when all that stuff dries up and it comes down to brass tacks, Brian, and you got to decide, are we going to continue or not continue as a company or an organization? You can guarantee who's on the chopping block first. And it's going to be all of these positions and all of these so-called professionals that take up these roles. Because, as you noted, they don't add anything really of value to the companies. So those will be the ones that when push comes to shove and you're up against, do we continue operating as a company or do we shut down? We got to cut staff. We got to cut half our budget, three quarters of our budget or a quarter of our budget, whatever. That's where it's going to start. And if that's where it should start, because it's people not providing really any context or a content or whatever.
And honestly, like, why are we incentivizing people if they want to go into an industry, make it to where they have the ability to go into that industry? That's opening up the door for them. If someone comes and they have the qualifications, ignore the skin color, ignore whether they're male or female, and hire them. Gameindustry.biz, they put out this Black Voices Progress Report. And these are the type of things that I always think, if they were to flip the table and, or, you know, turn the table and put, just change black for white, what would people flip out over this article? And yeah, they would. The thing I don't like is that there's two different standards for what's acceptable. And something like this, now you could say, hey, this is for Black History Month, you know, so he's just talking about it. But he's saying, you know, for here, black people make up 13% of the U.S. population, but make up 3% of the game industry. I don't think anymore. I would say that years ago, there were things holding them back from being able to get into the industry. A lot of it had to do with schooling and education, but a lot of that was them not being motivated to go into those industries, and parents weren't pushing them to do those things. I mean, that's the big push with Asians. You know, Asians are not different. You know what? Asian parents, generally in a lot of families, will push their kids in education, just push. And so guess what? They end up being doctors, you know, really talented engineers and programmers. It's not because they're different. It is based on how they were raised and what they were pushed to do. If you want to push black people into the industry, get to the parents to encourage them to push their kids to do these sort of things. And guess what? Once those kids grow up, then you'll have an industry full of people that are willing to do it. But it's never been pushed, and they're thinking, well, I'll just send my kid to a school and have them push it. It's going to take more than that. And, you know, this number's raising, but I just hate that they sit there and act like they can't get into the industry. They can. A person of any race can get hired at a company nowadays. And you're more likely, if you're not white, to be hired at these companies.
This is probably going to come off as a, you might disagree with this comment, but I am all for actual diversity. Yeah. I have to clarify and say actual, because when the term diversity is used now, especially in these contexts, in these industries, it's not actual diversity.
You're pushing a fake balance.
Correct. And I would argue that many of the industries that we specifically talk about, the video game industry, the tech industry, whatever other sort of tangentially related industry, they have done a lot over the last, let's call it decade, two decades, to increase diversity. And when I say diversity, that doesn't just mean skin color. I mean, diversity is thought, experiences, ways that you come at tackling a problem. I mean, why large companies, why are there so many people in the room? Because it's diversity of thought. And so way that 30 people see it, they might all agree. And then there's the one guy that goes, yeah, but have you ever thought about it from this angle? And then it's a light bulb for the 30 other people. Brian, that is diversity. And that's a good thing. I mean, diverse thought is a very, very good thing, but that's not what this push is.
And seeing people with different backgrounds can bring some of that diversity of thought. But the problem is, just because a person's black doesn't mean that they're going to bring a diversity of thought. Just because a person's from India doesn't mean they're going to bring a diversity of thought. You shouldn't be looking at their skin's color. You should be looking at the type of ideas that they come up with, you know, the type of the way that they think. And that's the things that you should be testing for. That for the company I work for, that's what they test for. They don't hire you based on your experience. They hire you based on how you solve problems and how you think, because they want a certain type of mindset to be how they approach customers. And that has worked very well for us. Yeah, but it's not based on, you know, they do push hiring women and everything else, which I have no new issues with. But the problem is, if you're going to pick one purely based on that characteristic over another, that is totally wrong in my mind. If one person was more qualified for that position and would have brought more value to the table for that position, and you chose not to hire them because you wanted to hire based off a different demographic, then you're a sexist, racist, whatever it is you're basing your hiring decision on. That's what you are. And it's crazy that it's become so accepted in the industry as we can do it. No one's scared about doing it. They talk about it. It's open. Yeah. I mean, just look at what Google does and these different companies. They're blatant about it. You know, getting hired is difficult when you look like me. But you go back 20 years, the people, you know, on the other side of this, they would say this, would have said the same thing. We hit a point where I think it evened out, and then we kept going. That's the problem. we reached the line, and then we passed it just because
went too far.
And that's what I think we're battling with now. Okay, you got what you needed. Let's figure out where the fair line is, the honest line is, the one that's fair for everybody in the real sense, because you know any race can be discriminated against, any sex can be discriminated against, and any form of that should be what's wrong, period. Right? That's it. Make that the distinction, and then you won't have this white versus black, male versus female, because if everybody has an equal opportunity, which they claim equal opportunity employer, that's what they claim, but that's not true. It's definitely not true anymore.
And it's important to note that equal opportunity does not equate to equal outcomes. And that is that is part of the hard pill that's the hard pill to swallow for a vast majority of these individuals. Just because
they want everybody to be exactly the same, and you can't guarantee that. You can only give them the opportunity to be able to reach the same level.
Correct. Absolutely. All right, Brian, anything else before we jump out of here?
Nope, I think that covers it. If you want to find me, you can find me at Boise Computer on X or at Brian Aldridge on Gab, Getter, Truth Social, wherever else. If you want to check out my blog, biteoftech.com. And of course, if you go to our website, infectionpodcast.com, just go to the upper right-hand side and you'll see join us on Discord. And if you do that, you can get a hold of Nick or I directly. There's a show news channel if you want to toss some links in there. We've got 11 ARC servers running if you want to jump on one of those. Politics and everything else you can go discuss. If you want to watch the live show, we do that through Twitch or YouTube. Or you can watch the upload after the fact on Rumble. And we also upload the audio forms of the podcast on various platforms. You can get those at the lower right-hand side. Lots of different ways to listen. If you are listening, that means we've got the show notes up for that episode, and there's a video and audio player built right into that page, and then links for everything that we discussed. So if you're wanting to maybe catch a video, go see a source material for something we're referencing, it's all available there for when the show is posted. If you want to support us, you can go to the support menu option up top, or you can go to infectionpodcast.com/support. There you go. Yeah, should have unplugged your board.
What happened? Why is this doing the logo headline thing? Oh, my. Gosh,
oh, it's kind of coming back. This is what happened that one time.
It'll be fixed next week and I restart the program. All right, Brian. thank you very much. Greatly appreciate it. Looking forward to next week's Doom and Gloom episode. Everybody is losing their jobs. It's all going to hell. But there's just so much stuff backed up. So we'll jump into that next week. You can check me out on social media. I'm on X at Nicholas M. Craig. I did have a pretty cool opportunity if you're politically oriented. I did interview the former, the 45th president of the U.S., Donald Trump, this week. You can find a link to that on my website, nickcraig.com. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, of course. If you want to check out our show notes, maybe you missed a portion of the program, you can go back and find all of that by heading on over to our website. It's infectionpodcast.com. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.